And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hey, I just met you.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to today's show. You know, I've often wondered why the powerful wine and beer spirits sector has put up with the non-alcoholic sector appropriating the use of their monikers for products that contain no alcohol. It's not wine, folks. And as if on cue last week, I was so happy to see the Italian agricultural minister Francesco Lollobrigida. Love that name. He's also the brother-in-law, by the way, of the Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni. He asked that the word wine be removed from from alcohol-free wine products in Italy, which I think is just great to hear that. Not because they shouldn't be in the marketplace. I have no problem with people drinking non-alcoholic beverages. As he said, let's make non-alcoholic drinks, but not call them wine. And I couldn't agree more for one simple reason. It's not wine. It's some sort of beverage that undergoes a series of highly mechanical machinations. It's all technical, the way that they remove this alcohol and strip out the alcohol along with the flavor and the texture most of the time of these products. But, you know, people like to drink them, and I'm all for it. They are not wine. So it was nice to see that. We'll see whether that has any effect on the wine industry going forward. I read another review last week about this fantastic non-alcoholic sparkling wine being made in France. It was a 1,200-word article, and the word sparkling wine was used 42 times. So there you go. Hey, let's get back to Vancouver and the spring and the weather. Guess what? I got some wine picks for you today. These are really great values for you to check out. The Fontana Freda Arnais is really a fun wine for you to discover. It's $17.99 currently at the moment. You need to check this wine out. It's just such a beautiful wine made in northern Italy, full of pears and hawthorn blossoms, acacia. Really a fantastic wine to add to your repertoire. For those of you who can't get away from Sauvignon Blanc, one of the current deals is the Villa Maria Private Bin East Coast. That's selling at $16.99. And my favorite rosé at the moment, budget rosé, is the Cote Moss Aurore. This wine from Paul Moss is in a liter bottle, sells for $14.99. Now on the show today, Pierangelo Tomasi, he's the executive director and family member of Tomasi Family Estates. Kimberly Hundermark, she joins us to talk about the upcoming Okanagan Spring Wine Festival. Robert Stelmachuk, we're going to have a nice chat about what's going on in BC with food and wine. He's the wine director at Mott 32. But up next, Thomas Cooney, he's the export manager for Damolano and Tuorita. He joins us to discuss two different superstar Italian wineries. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and we are set to go.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at dioravines.com.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, Marketing Manager at Visit Penticton. Did you know that Penticton has over 80 wineries within just a 20-minute drive? Joining me is Colin Ross, General Manager of Tightrope Winery and President of the Naramata Bench Wineries Association. Colin, what makes Penticton and the Naramata Bench such a great wine destination?
The soil and the climate have made the Naramata Bench one of Canada's premier wine regions. With a distinct terroir and welcoming community of quality-minded, award-winning vineyards, it's home to over 40 wineries, featuring incredible views, great dining experiences, and various events throughout the year.
What is the best way to visit the wineries?
You can rent a bike and cycle the KVR Trail to visit them. Spring is the perfect time for it, with beautiful weather and fewer crowds than summer. And yes, our wineries have plenty of wine and are ready to welcome you.
Amazing. Thanks, Colin. Sign your Penticton vacation now. For information on all our wineries, tasting rooms, and events, go to visitpenticton.com.
Your favorite wines? delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Sweet dreams are made of these. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to the show. Our guest is Thomas Cooney. He's the expert manager for Damolano and Tuorita. It's a dream job. I don't know how you get these jobs. People cut their arms off to have one of those winners. You have both of them. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anthony. You actually surprised me from second one. I wasn't ready for this welcoming.
Okay, well, I'm going to split them up. So we're going to talk about Damolano first for our listeners, and then we'll talk about Tuorita. So let's start with Damolano. Let's talk about Barolo. Let's talk about the soul of this place. What should people really know about Damolano?
Thank you very much. I mean, number one, Damolano, the first things that comes to my mind, 1890s. So we already go backward almost 134 years of, experience and overall 133 harvest. That's already a significant number.
Yeah.
Number two, I would like to say, one of the most iconic and unique grape varieties, Nebbiolo. So everywhere I travel over the world, I'm a big fan and, of course, wine lover. But the things that always keep after 20 years very solid in my mind is the inimitability of Nebbiolo, which is translated in the uniqueness of reading the soil.
Yeah.
And looks like the Lange pocket is something very unique.
Yeah. And in fact, it's kind of interesting because when I was young, I thought, oh, these Barolos are very big. But now I think that these are more Pinot Noir-like, and they're more interesting, more complex, and way more fun than, you know, your average Cabernet Sauvignon or Cabernet Franc. Like, it's a really interesting grape.
That's a very good point. Actually, I just got out from the seminary about the, you know, the big red titans here at the, at the British Columbia Wine Festival.
Yeah.
And one of the question of the attendants was, what do you think about, you know, this more drinkable, more approachable Barolo? And the reality is, Anthony, that I study all my life, you know, agriculture, agronomy, enology. I grew up in a winery, so the only way that we find out it might be sustainable is the fact that, of course, the weather changed a lot.
Yeah.
So I checked the data from the 60s, 70s. There was a lot of snow. We don't have anymore. And the summer was shorter than 3 months. So as we speak, the summer goes about almost 4 months with a very higher temperature. And at the same time, we starting to be concerned about the water reservoir because if it doesn't snow...
There is not much snow.
Yeah, especially the Barolo DOCG appellation is driven by dry farming land.
Yeah.
So we don't have water, but we don't even have the possibility... You know, it's a hilly area, very, very sophisticated. And for some reason, there is one common point in this conversation, which is our ancestor had a really tough time on harvesting because it was very cold or even very, very hot.
Yeah.
But different weather, same challenge.
Yeah.
Today, it's still challenging because, you know, you have a higher temperature, then you have water, and then you have low quantity, and then you have concentration. So this is probably... philosophy speaking, I would say to summarize, it takes a really lot of effort and strength and focus, and probably that's the key to enjoy more also the uniqueness of these wines.
And Damolano makes a lot of, quote, Barolos,
that's
so that they have an interesting lineup. So you brought a wine today. Maybe we'll talk about this wine, and then we'll maybe mention some of the other ones find.
I mean, the uniqueness of this one is called Barolo Classico Le Cinque Vigne. So classic by definition, because in the 60s, you were able to blend different vineyards in different subzone of the 11 ones. And in this one, we have specifically Grinzane Cavour, Barolo, Novello, Verduno, and Dogliani. So there are five subzone. Youngest vineyard, though, so between 25, I would say 18 to 30 years old, to give you a bracket.
Yeah.
And even here, old world school, so 25, 30 is a young vineyards.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're going to have also different five single vineyard that the age of the vines is between 50 to 80 years old. So,
yeah.
So as agricultural speaking, youngest vineyard, they tend to deliver a little bit more quantity and overall less concentration, which is actually appreciated in this Barolo, which is a Barolo that has to be drink also as we speak young. Or can be also age, you know, for decades. I guess the best things to summarize even here is we like the complexity, but not the heaviness. We like the acidity, red as freshness.
Yeah.
So that's probably.
And just because I have you, before we switch over to the Tuorita, just very quickly, 17, 18, 19, 20, what should we.
Oh my God.
What are we looking for? What are we buying? What are we buying for our grandkids? What are we drinking now? Like,
Bravo. That's a very smart question. So it's also not easy, I believe, for you know, the final consumer, because there is so many options on the market. But to be very fast, 2017 was a vintage very complicated for many reasons. In some area we had hail. We had, you know, a lot of rain before the harvest. So I recommend 17 to drink right now.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a classic, let's call nickname, wet vintage.
Yeah.
2018 was very classic.
Yeah.
So it was like not super hot, not super cold. It was very cool vintage. And you will feel this coolness into the wine, which is very versatile. You can drink it right now as we speak, or you can keep for 10 years.
Okay.
And then certainly 1920, which has been just released.
Save your money.
Just
load up.
They are rockets. Very straight.
I say to young people, I say, you know what? Just buy these two vintages, put them away, and then 20 years from now, say, Tony, you were right.
Yes.
I'll be gone, but they'll be drinking great wine. So, yeah, they're two great years.
Yeah, no, they are very good vintages.
Well done. You jumped ship, sort of, and went to another winery as well. How did that happen? And Tuorita is quite a famous label now, and you've got one of the hottest wines at the wine festival
that's
we're going to taste. Tell us a bit about Tuorita, because it's not Nebbiolo.
It's not Nebbiolo. I was always attracted by those wines that I tasted for a while all over the world. And then I happened to being called from the son of the property. And so we sat down in New Jersey at Princeton University.
Yeah.
And that was the starting conversation. So we thought that, you know, as a benchmark, both wineries are very similar on the DNA in terms of philosophy. So still family driven. Barely 40 to 50 hectares and 350,000 bottles for each. So very small.
Very similar,
Yeah. So the goal was, you know, to expose the history of this winery, because it's fairly young, 1984, but from 1997, Giusto Di Notri was the first 100 points ever assigned in Italy by Robert Parker.
Yeah.
And that was like the beginning of the taking off.
Yeah.
Today we have with us a very once in a lifetime, or like my grandfather used to say, once in a lifetime, but if you're lucky, you can have every day.
I like your grandfather.
I know, he was a cool guy.
Yeah.
So, Ready Gaffi is the name of the creek, 100% Merlot.
Yeah.
The uniqueness of this wine is the fact that it's such a meticulous job, starting from the vineyard, from the soil. We are in Suvereto, the heart, northern part of Maremma, Colline Metallifere, so a lot of pink marble clay, very unique landscape, amphitheater shape, barely 2 miles away from the Tyrrhenian Sea. So it's another really irreplicable atmosphere.
Yeah.
And they were able to read that. And so very small intensification of the vineyard, so small benches, but with a lot of concentration, organic and biodynamic. And the most interesting point, and a lot of people don't believe, they do the berry selection by hands.
Oh, wow.
So
By hand.
There are people on the belt. They choose every berry that goes through. And this is probably, I would say, a big plus to keep the consistency. That's why this wine has been already 5-time 100 pointers and is always 98, 99, 100, 98. It's like a watch.
That's like the German, like the truck and Bernard Schlesi, just picking berry by berry, eh? That's crazy.
That's why a lot of people.
That's why the wine's not $7 a bottle either.
That's probably one of the reasons why. You're right.
Yeah. It's so delicious, though. And yet, when people say Merlot, they get surprised. But Merlot has been around for a long time in Italy. It's not a new world variety.
No, I completely agree. I think there is also a misconception. Merlot, unfortunately, you know, my grandfather was prisoner on the Second World War, and somehow he, as soon as he started afterwards, everyone has a belief that Merlot was like the everyday wine,
yeah.
Very, I would say, medium slash light body,
sure.
Just lower alcohol. But of course, French taught us that if he's handled properly, Merlot can deliver outstandingly wine, and so we did. Think about also a Masetto or you know,
Masetto and Redagafi. Come on,
I mean,
these are at the top now.
And that's why a lot of people, when they try, sometimes I do blind tasting, especially. I said, this is Redagafi. And they go, what is it? It's a Super Tuscan, just to give them a frame. And then they drink it. Wow.
They say, that must be Petrus. No, not Petrus.
No,
it's
exactly.
Actually more interesting.
And they go, like, it's 100% Merlot. Oh.
Oh, it can't be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's, it's very unique as well, as we said before.
You have a good life, Thomas. Thomas Cooney's the export manager for Damolano and Tuorita. You travel the world. You've had some run-ins with Mr. Trump.
Yeah. I mean, Paul McCartney, Mr. Trump, Richard Gere.
Yeah.
I mean, Manny is some other singer, because traveling a lot, especially, this wine has a very high network, luckily for me. So
yeah, it attracts a certain crowd.
That's exactly so.
It keeps everything fun.
No, it's fun. And the funny part is I have a lot of people that want to work with me.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they only see the beautiful side.
Yeah, they don't see the hard work
side. I mean, you have to stay away from your family.
Yeah.
I got used to it in 20 years, and luckily for me, I have a wonderful wife.
Yeah.
Because she worked with me, she understands. But there are some days that it's really tough, especially recently.
Yeah.
I'll give you a few examples. I was in February 2021 in Moscow for a private event at the Kremlin.
Yeah.
And after 1 week I came back, the war started.
Yeah. Wow.
Or even I was in China when COVID happened and I had COVID.
Yeah.
So
stuff
happens. It's closer than you think sometimes, or even bad weather, hurricane in Florida. And I think, you got to be very well disciplined, very motivated. And
I would wrap it up by saying there's great history in wine, both in the production and the sale.
That's a good one.
And drinking.
I'm going to take it if you allow me. Yes,
Thomas, so great to catch up with you.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks for these delicious wines and the wonderful conversation.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you soon. Please come back to Vancouver.
I will. Thank you to Vancouver. Thank you to you. And thank you to, Canadian people.
Thank you. Ciao. That was Thomas Cooney, export manager for Damolano and Tuorita. Still ahead, Robert Stelmachuk joins us. He's the wine director at Mott 32 Restaurant in Vancouver. On the radio weekly in 25 cities across British Columbia and on demand on all the major podcast platforms, this is BC Food and Wine Radio, and I'm Anthony Gismondi.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Hello, I'm Anthony Gismondi with 2 Minutes in Cowichan. Our guest is Kenzie Knight from Tourism Cowichan. Kenzie, tell us about Vancouver Island's incredible jewel, the Cowichan Valley.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Anthony. Cowichan is actually one of the larger wine regions in BC. It's home to 14 wineries, many of which are family-owned and operated. And it also has one of the longest histories of winemaking on Vancouver Island, dating back to the 1920s when loganberries were first used to make fruit wines. So the warm Mediterranean-like climate and the rich soil really create a unique terroir that has produced numerous award-winning wines here.
And Kenzie, I imagine now is a great time to get out and visit the many wineries in the area.
Yeah, that's right. Now's a great time. Many of Cowichan's wineries can be visited year-round. What I would recommend doing is spending multiple days in the region and just enjoying the unhurried pace. And if you want to leave the planning to someone else, you can take a guided winery tour with one of our friendly tour operators. And beyond that, Cowichan is also home to many breweries, cideries, and distilleries, so there's lots to explore for craft beverage lovers. years.
Yeah, and if you really want to make the most of it, why not plan a trip and take advantage of some of the already scheduled regional events?
Yes, absolutely. I would suggest planning a trip during the annual Cowichan Valley Wine Festival. It happens every August, and it's just a wonderful way to experience the vineyards. You can sample a variety of incredible wines and meet our winemakers in person to have more of that personal experience.
And are there any other events coming up in the Cowichan that would interest the wine, beer, or cider crowd?
There's a few to watch for. So in late June, Avril Creek Vineyard will host Noir Fest, which is a must-do event for any Pinot Noir lovers. And then in October, there's the annual Cider Harvest Festival at Marydale Cidery and Distillery, which brings in over 15 of BC's craft cideries. And then for the craft beer fans, there's the Cowichan Craft Beer and Food Festival, which will be back in Chemainus this August, so definitely watch for that.
Kenzie, thanks so much for the many great ideas for visiting Cowichan this year.
You're most welcome.
Plan your trip at tourismcowichan.com. Till next time, I'm Anthony Gismondi.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, BC. Welcome back. Our guest is Robert Stelmachuk. Many of you know Robert is the wine director of Mott 32. I always say I think it's the best Chinese restaurant in Canada, maybe North America. Honestly, people say, oh, you're exaggerating. I'm saying, no, I think it is. You're in the Paradox Hotel on West Georgia. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Tony. Great
to have you back.
Good to be back on the show, actually.
Yeah. I wonder how many glasses of wine you've tasted since the last time I saw you.
I don't think my mother wants to know.
No. Actually, my mother can't even really figure out what I do.
Oh, perfect.
So she thinks...
Well, no, my mom knows I taste a lot of wines. I don't drink a lot of wine.
Yeah. My mother knows that I'm in the wine business, some sort of business, but she doesn't really understand what I do. So it's all good.
Perfect.
Great to see you. Always good to see you. I was thinking about you this year coming out of the wine festival. This year's wine festival and the Italians were here.
Yes.
And they have such a great food and wine culture in Italy. And I know that we have a good food and wine culture in BC, but it's a different kind of culture. It's not quite at that level yet.
I think it is. I think the culture for the Italian community started much younger in everyone's years. Yeah. They were brought up with wine being part of every table to dine on. And I think that's something that's tragically lost a little bit in the North American, or certainly in our market here, where people don't know. They just think of wine in one dimension as a sophisticated, expensive beverage, and that they don't fully understand what it can do to enhance everyday everyday meals.
Yeah.
At every price range.
Although we have, like, in the last, say, since the 90s, early 90s, since the Okanagan got going, at least people saw vines, saw grapes growing, and then saw them being processed. They go, oh, that's wine. Like it's a long-term deal. It's not just a glass at dinner.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, here, not everybody grew up with vines in their backyard, for sure. But yeah. I think the Okanagan certainly helped to inspire people.
Well, I'm interested in a bit in your clientele, too, because you have a large Asian clientele, and a lot of people would say, well, Asians, they don't drink much wine at all, and yet you sell a lot of fine wine in Mott 32, and you sell a lot of it to Asians. What's changed in that market?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Mott 32 here, especially in Vancouver, caters to a lot. Certainly, there's a great big Asian clientele that come to see us on a regular basis, but also a large Caucasian basis too. But as far as that, there are a lot of the Asian market don't think that you should be drinking, certainly never at lunch, but drinking very little at dinner with Chinese food.
Yeah,
it just was never done. But now if it's given to them as an option like we're providing at Mott 32, they really get to see the kind of guest experiences that they can have in food and wine harmony. The food is so, so agreeable with wine.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, and it's so diverse, and it's so complex.
And actually, hearkening back to the Italians being here, one of the things that I'm big on is that, for me, Sangiovese seems to be a grape that really works well with Chinese food. And I don't know what, you know, I don't know what the symbiotic thing is, but when people say, you know, they always say, oh, I should have a Riesling. I said, you should try a Sangiovese with that dish. You would be surprised.
Yeah, I think we talked about this just before we even opened Mott here in 2017. But, you know, globally, if you look at wine globally, Chianti Classico in particular is the best secret weapon wine across the table, hands down, for all the Chinese cuisine that we're offering.
Wow. That's quite a statement.
It's that natural acidity, which some people find as sour, which is a negativity, but of course you can't have wine without that.
Right.
But once you incorporate food into it, it balances everything out well beyond your expectations.
Yeah. Let's talk about a few dishes at Mott, because there's you know, some of this, I say standard, there's nothing standard about them, but that people should order and try with some wine. What are a few of them that you could walk us through?
Probably one of the biggest things that people are surprised by are our dim sum.
Yeah.
All made fresh by hand every morning, never frozen, steamed to order. But our Shaolong Bao, we do a hot and sour soup dumpling. And something that I've used outside the box from Italy, actually, is the Medice Ermite Corciglio Reggiano Lambrusco. It's a dry Lambrusco.
Easy for you to say.
But it's a dry Lambrusco, but it pairs so incredibly well. And doing a lightly effervescent red with that dish is the last thing people normally expect. We do it by the glass at Mott 32, and people are always so thoroughly impressed. Actually, they're pouring a new wine today that I'm super excited about too.
Oh
yeah,
all right. Well, you also came out of the psalm community. Well, you're in the psalm community, but
a little bit.
You've had an extended run there. Is it growing in Vancouver, or how is it changing, or what are the machinations of the modern sommelier?
You know, I think there is a small niche in that market of the culture of having a sommelier or being a sommelier. And certainly restaurants having them, regardless of the size or the size of their program or the size of their dining room.
Mm-hmm.
I love some of these, you know, and don't get me wrong, it's way harder to run a small wine program than it is to run a big one.
Yeah.
Big one eats up your time and some of your money, obviously. But a small program, you have to be that much more judicious as to what you're picking.
Mm-hmm.
You have to rotate it more often to keep things fresh for all of your guests. Mm-hmm. But that community, I think there is so much talent here in the Vancouver market. I wasn't kidding when I said I am thoroughly inspired by the other sommeliers that work in this community with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, regardless of how long I've been doing this for, they all inspire me every day to be better at what I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really good. And I think that culture, there is a small block that's thirsty for knowledge. There's so much information. I mean, when I started, you had to get a book from Kohl's bookstore.
Yes. Yeah.
And now what you can get online and through the community that we have, the organization.
Well, even
like
your
apps,
guests are reading the information at the table on their phones.
Yeah, sometimes that's a good thing and a bad thing.
It is.
Yeah.
They say, hey, what's going on with this wine? It says it's not so good. Like,
yeah.
I like that. Robert Stelmachuk is our guest. He's the wine director of Mott 32. Of course, they're in downtown Vancouver. On West Georgia, inside the Paradox Hotel, just to the left as you go in, I guess.
Or, yes.
Yeah, just the left.
You can enter right off Georgia Street.
Off the street, too, yeah. Robert, you're famous for your rosé wagon. Will we be seeing that all summer soon? Or?
You absolutely will, yeah. The rosé rickshaw will have, I think it's going to be our seventh annual.
Yeah.
And it'll run, usually starts off around Mother's Day and runs until, you know, September sometime. And it'll be a rotating feature this year of about 30 rosés usually available at all times, but those will be rotating.
Yeah.
But the key is all dry rosés, but in their different presentations, some light and delicate, some more herbal, some more alcohol forward, some richer, heavier, full body from Bandol.
Yeah.
But global, there'll be a global representation for it for sure.
Yeah. What attracts you to rosé? Like, because you are big on it.
I think one of the things that I like to promote about rosé is that it's not just a summer patio wine. And it's not one dimension, like light Provence, pale color.
Right.
That it can be way more year-round for everybody.
Yeah, more versatile.
Especially when you get into the bubbles conversion, which is one of the things that I was excited about that Medici Ermite is doing, their new Careza. They're doing a method traditional from Lambrusco di Sabaro.
Yeah.
But it's unlike any other sparkling rosé I've had because it's more herbal and more savory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you just crave food when you have this wine.
It's more Emilia Romagna.
There's a reason why they're all gastronomic wines there for sure, right?
They're really interesting, interesting wines. Okay, I'll put you on the spot. If we had a sparkling rosé from British Columbia, what would be your choice there?
You know what I'm absolutely crazy about? Joie Farm.
Yeah,
The new team that took over at Joie, they do one called Plan de Vie.
Uh-huh.
And
yes,
it's,
they know that.
It's under Crown Cap closure. We piled through that last year, and it's just an astonishingly pure, clean, vibrant crunchy cranberry pomegranate fruit, but another gastronomic wine. Like, I just crave food with that wine when I have it. They've done a knockout job with that wine.
And if I'm at Mod 32, what am I eating with that rosé?
You know, we've only got about 130 things on the menu, so that's the putting me on the spot part.
Okay.
I think, honestly, if we went into our sweet and sour pork, it does incredibly well with that because of the acidity to it. We do a Szechuan tofu from our plant-based menu that would be brilliant with it also.
Right on. You're also famous for the duck at Mod 32.
Very
bit, famous for it.
Yeah.
What is the wine for that dish?
Well, you know,
what is the style, I guess?
Well, you know, I had this conversation over lunch with somebody because a lot of people will think, oh, we're having ducks, so we have to have Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
You can do that. We have fantastic examples from around the world. But it can be a circumstantial dish, too. You can do richer, heavier whites, like white Chateauneuf du Pape. You can do good oaked, balanced oaked Chardonnays from anywhere in the world, really. Australia, BC, Little Engines Gold Chardonnay with our Peking duck is astonishing pairing
that
people don't see coming.
That's sort of rich.
It is, but it's not overtly rich or in your face, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then lighter, like a good classic light Valpolicella will work really well. Unoaked Syrah can do very well. So there's a lot of different things. But if, you know, if I'm picking one wine,
Robert, always great to catch up with you. I love chatting about the food at Mod 32. So looking ahead for this year, open when? How do people, they reserve online? You know, it changes so quickly how all this stuff works.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, obviously we're on Open Table and you can reserve through there.
Okay.
Mod's open for lunch 7 days a week, 11:30 till 2:30. And then every night opens at 5 o'clock. We don't close. Like Christmas Day, New Year's Day, we're open all the time.
And dim sum's available most of the time anyway?
Well, the dim sum selection at lunchtime is more extensive. We're all four categories. Stories are represented with junk fun and whatnot, but the dinner menu is also available at lunch. And then we do have a few dim sum at nighttime, but some of it's just exclusive for lunch.
Yeah, thanks, Vermont.
Thank you very much.
That was Robert Stelmachuk, wine director of Mod 32. Still to come, Kimberly Hundermark, general manager of Okanagan Spring Wine Festival. We'll get some insider tips on the spring event from Blossoms and Bites, a springtime meadery luncheon for two, and Thursday night cheese fondues at Summerhill.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Penticton, a perfect place to connect with nature. Plan your May-long trip and attend the various events at the Meadowlark Nature Festival, May 16th through 20th, at numerous locations throughout the South Okanagan. The Meadowlark Nature Festival connects people with nature, engaging and inspiring them to protect the unique habitats and species of this region and our planet. Go to visitpenticton.com/events for more upcoming festivals and events in Penticton.
Attention wine connoisseurs, Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
It's time to think turkey and buy BC. Your BC turkey farmers work hard all year to bring high-quality products to your table. Whether it's a weeknight dinner or a special occasion, turkey is always a delicious source of lean protein. Next time you're planning dinner, think about picking up some ground turkey, a breast roast, or turkey thighs to switch things up for your family. Find recipes, cooking tips, and more at bc.canadianturkey.ca. This ad is supported by British Columbia's Buy BC Partnership Program.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, Hello, BC. Up next, Kimberly Hundermark. She's the general manager of the Okanagan Spring Wine Festival. She joins us now to talk about the upcoming show. Kimberly, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Maybe I'll start with the Okanagan Wine Festival, because it used to be one event a while ago. It's shaped differently now. Let's start with that.
Well, we now are hosting events like right throughout the year, focused on signature events during spring, fall, and winter. And so now we're launching our Spring Festival, which will take place on the heels of the BC Wine Awards at the end of May, and then head right into 3 weeks of great programming in June.
Yeah. And you kick off with what you're calling the BC Top 50. Now, is this the result of the original wine tastings that were held?
Correct. We've reverted back to the BC Wine Awards. The Lieutenant Governor's office has made some changes there. So we wanted to flip it on its heels a little bit and do something fun and different. So we've established the BC Top 50, which will be the average of all those scores for those wines that are submitted. And we're going to do an exclusive tasting. Harkens back to years ago when there wasn't the entertainment factor with the wine tastings. They were very much a deep dive into the quality and experience of the wines. And that's what this will be focused on. So the BC Top 50s will be very much focused on the wine tasting experience.
Yeah, and where is that event held? That's I think it's in Penticton, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, Penticton Trade and Convention Center.
Right, so that would be the kickoff. So it's a collection now of, you say, large events and smaller events that you're calling Taste and Sips. How does it break out?
Well, basically, reacting to what industry wants now is we don't want anything too big. We want a little more engagement, a little more interaction. So the SIPS program will be the larger format with a little more live entertainment, culinary programming, a lot of wineries to taste through. And then when you get to the taste programs, they'll be a little more dialed in. More cellar door experiences, more regionally themed. We're just trying to offer something that keeps it interesting for our guests, because everybody has a different desire and a different trajectory with their wine experiences.
Yeah, and I understand that you got some feedback from wineries as well, like from winemakers saying that they wanted to have this time or spend this time with the people who made the effort to come out to the festival.
Oh, absolutely. The results now of seeing those winemakers actually behind the table coming out to the events is much different than it was previously. You used to get a lot of sales teams, marketing people, that sort of thing. But the winemakers are loving it because they get to talk about their wine. And we know they like to talk about their wine.
Yeah, they do. Our guest is Kimberly Hundermark. She's the general manager of the Okanagan Spring Wine Festival, which runs June 2 to 23 now. It's a three-week affair. So let's talk about some of these special events at the wineries.
Well, we launch on the 2nd with the taste series up in Naramata. So we're working with the Naramata Bench Wineries Association. That's something we're doing too, is we're also working with the wineries associations to make sure that we're helping to elevate their messaging and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so that will be weekend one. Weekend two is a full weekend. That starts with the top 50 and then leads into a taste program at the District Wine Village in Oliver. And then on the Saturday will be a SIPS event at Spirit Ridge Resort up on the rooftop. We want to take everybody outside. My God, let's let them experience these beautiful vistas that we have rather than keeping them in a large hall. So we're really excited to be working with Spirit Ridge on that program.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. And so does District Wine Village. I mean, it's quite a successful project down there as well. And that would be in the round, I guess, out in the middle.
Well, what they'll do is they actually visit all of the partners. So they'll have their pass and they'll be able to go and visit the breweries, the wineries. They can go to workshop and have a cool cocktail, enjoy some live music in the round. So it's a full day and it's a one-stop shop. You park your car and you just experience for the whole day. And it's Saturday and Sunday this year too.
Right. Something else you have, which is great, if you don't have to park your car, you've got a designated driver program as well. How does that work?
So the designated driver pass actually allows them to have the culinary experience or a non-alcoholic beverage experience. We just want to play it safe. We've had a demand for that over the last couple of festivals, so we thought now spring is a perfect time to launch this program. And so we're really excited because it's a responsible thing to do, and the partners are all really, really excited about it too.
Yeah. Okay, and these taste events, is there one or two you might want to highlight or tell us how they work?
Well, we're changing it up in the different regions. So we're doing the Armada, which will be more throughout the route, and then the district is all in one place. And then we're offering one in downtown Kelowna at Sandhill. So that'll be the first winery-specific one where wineries will be coming to that property along with culinary partners and doing a rosé theme. It's a week late, we know that, but the first weekend's way too busy. So we're taking it to midweek on a Thursday. So great way to start a long weekend if you'd like. And that'll be kind of a business after five as well. So Thursday evening at Sandhill in downtown. And then the following weekend, we're taking a little bit of a break from the taste program because we've got Father's Day, which we can touch on. And then the final weekend will be up in Lake Country through the Scenic Sip Route. So we're so excited to be able to showcase north to south, south to north for the entire 3 weekends.
Wow, you've got a lot planned, and even you mentioned Father's Day, but you've got a barbecue and blues event going on Father's Day.
Yeah, we're working with the Okanagan, Heart of Wine Country Wineries Association, which is Skawhaw Lake and Okanagan Falls Wineries, and Nighthawk. The Bibbies have been generous enough to invite us to partner with that whole group to do an event at their property. So another collective, a cooperative effort, which is wonderful. We'll have some cideries, breweries, wineries from that area in the vineyard at Nighthawk, which has one of the most beautiful, beautiful views of the Okanagan Falls.
Yeah.
And that'll be a great way to celebrate Dad.
Yeah,
some
no.
blues music. And it's a family, this one's a family-centric event too, so the kids can come. It's just going to be a really wonderful Father's Day weekend.
Yeah.
Program. Yeah.
That sounds good. And finally, on the 22nd, you're doing something with Silver Star as well on the solstice.
Yeah, we're moving up, we're moving up north to Vernon to Silver Star Resort. We're working with Destination Silver Star to focus on an outdoor event there in the beautiful village, which again, breathtaking views. And we'll have winery partners. We'll be working with their incredible culinary partners. They're so supportive of the BC wines. It's just the right thing to be doing. We'll be doing it in the afternoon, however, because they're a little afraid of how cold it gets up there at night. So we won't be able to actually celebrate solstice and watch the sun go down. But we'll definitely gear up that afternoon with great live music, wineries, and culinary. So we're excited about that
yeah.
one as well.
It's a big lineup. So where can people get all the information, and how do you get tickets? How does all that work?
Links are on all of the event pages. The best place to go is to the thewinefestivals.com. Go to the events page and all of the events. And that's not just ours, it's all the wineries as well, because there's close to 50 events thus far, and that's not even taking into consideration what's still being posted. Just for the month of June. So there's links to everybody's ticket pages, information on stay and play packages. You can find out where tour operators are for shuttles. It's just full of information. And again, all of the destination organizations have their pages too, so you can look at what's going on in Penticton or Kelowna or Lake Country.
Yeah.
So it's a one-stop shop.
Kimberly, that's a fantastic summary, and great to chat with you today. I know there's lots going on in the Okanagan. For people who don't know, there's lots of wine available. All the wineries are fully open on May 1st,
Absolutely.
So there's plenty to do in the valley this year.
Yeah, we invite everybody to please come and spend your time in beautiful Okanagan this summer and support our BC wineries.
Right on. Thanks so much, Kimberly. Great to chat with you.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
That was Kimberly Hundermark. She was the general manager of the Okanagan Spring Wine Festival coming up across the valley. You can take part from June 2nd to June 22nd in a whole pile of events. Up next, Pierangelo Tomasi. He's the executive director and family member of Tomasi Family Estates in the Veneto, Northern Italy.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Penticton, a perfect place for outdoor adventures this spring. After a full day of activities, stop in for a visit to one of almost 100 area wineries, many that are now reopened after their winter hibernation. Enjoy this quieter time of year with an intimate spring wine tasting and a chance to sample some Okanagan vintages. Dine in world-class locally sourced restaurants too. It's the perfect destination for a relaxing spring getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours and winery events. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Many people ask me which wines they should buy. My first question is, what do you like? Because when I know what they prefer, I can nudge them left or right to something similar, but often better at the same price. But if you don't like the wine, nothing I can say will change your mind. Taste is a personal thing, so ultimately, it's up to you to find a wine writer who aligns with your taste and start from there. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit my website, gismondionwine.com, to find out if we can agree on something to drink tonight.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
I can feel my face when I'm with you, but I love it, but I love it. Oh, I can feel my face.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and of course, it's the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our next guest is Pierangelo Tomasi. He's the executive director and family member for Tomasi Family Estates. Pierangelo, welcome to the show.
Grazie.
Great to see you back in Vancouver.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you enjoy coming to the city?
I always enjoy coming to Vancouver.
Yeah. You've had a lot of success in this market.
Well, luckily. Yeah. It's been for since 97, actually.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good run.
That's a good run.
Okay, so Tomasi, there's a lot of moving parts. How would you describe the company today to our listeners?
Well, I mean, Tomasi today is an Italian wine company.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, 97, which is the first time that our wines landed in BC.
Yeah.
Back then, we were only producing Veneto wines, and more specifically Valpolicella red wines, with
right.
Amarone in particular,
yep.
as the driver of our overall portfolio.
Yep.
Still a successful wine, luckily, mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
That said, 1997, the year when we landed for the first time, is also the year when my generation took over from our father,
yep.
father and uncles, and we decided to start a beautiful journey of expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Acquiring wineries in different regions in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And several years later, we can say that we are an Italian
wine
group.
Company, yeah. That's good. It's nice to have selection. I mean, Italy has so many places, so many grapes, so many wines anyways. It's nice to have your feet everywhere. It's good for your people too, is it not, to not just be focused on one wine or one style of wine all the time?
Well, I mean, I would say so. You see, we were actually driven by the fact that we're a large family.
Mm-hmm.
So back then we thought that the only way for us to expand would be to invest outside of the Veneto.
Yeah.
Then, of course, there is the passion that what you do. There is actually ambition also at some point.
Sure.
That drives you to buy even more and more and more.
Yeah.
Today we own 8 wineries from 7 different regions in Italy, from north to south.
Wow. Well, just saying a large family scares me. Any business with a large family, it's always quite exciting, I think.
Yeah.
Never a dull moment.
So far it has worked very well.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you brought a couple wines today, so I want to get into them. One in particular that I really enjoy. I recently have been tasting this wine. I'm so happy about it. And it's growing, it's having a moment, and it's called Lugana. What can you tell us about this wine?
So Lugana is the white wine produced at the south of the biggest lake in Italy, which
yeah.
is called Lake Garda, up
yeah.
in the north. And it's been produced, of course, for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But as you can say, it's really hot right now. It's one grape called Turbiana, which is a local local name of the clone. This is part of the bigger, more known Trebbiano family, if
yeah.
you will.
Yeah.
And well, this specific one that we're having right now, 2022, was entirely produced in stainless steel. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of Lugana as a white wine is that it can age, and you can also experiment some barrel aging as well.
It's just freaking delicious. Like, it's amazing. As soon as it hits your palate, it has this fabulous freshness. And it, but as you say, there's some intensity. There's a bit of, I mean, it's not Burgundy, but there's a bit of that complexity right in there, which holds your interest, and then it just sort of runs down the palate. I think it's just fantastic and largely unexplored, I think, in most markets.
You're right, and I would say that until just a few years ago, Lugana was pretty much consumed in Italy and in Germany a lot, thanks to the fact that Germans have been spending their summer holidays in the area.
Yeah, in Lake Garda. Yeah.
But it's now really becoming much more appreciated worldwide.
Yeah.
Thanks to the fact that the wine is good.
Yeah.
It matches the international cuisine.
I have this vision of people hanging around Lake Garda just having the time of their lives, you know, drinking very interesting wines that the rest of the world doesn't really know that much about. So it's nice to see this sort of sneak out into the marketplace. What about the vine? Is it just sort of Moselle selection now in the whole region from an original grape? Is there a bunch of different...
Well, actually, Lugana, it's a DOC white wine, and it requires at least 90% be this Turbiana grape. Our Lugana is actually 100% Turbiana.
Okay.
But there is a 10% allowance to blend something else.
Yeah.
And as far as I know from the region, there is actually Chardonnay used and Sauvignon Blanc.
But you're 100%. Why you just like that?
That's, well, because
the best, or the most authentic?
We have actually produced Lugana for a long time, although it's since 2014 that we decided to expand our investments and grow in that area. And we have always thought that the beauty of Lugana is very much based on the local variety.
Yeah.
So we don't see a reason why we should kind of, you know, I don't want to say change, but kind of touches original characteristic by blending another variety.
Yeah. Well, Vancouver's a great seafood market. If you were going to pick something for Lugana, what do you think would be a really interesting match?
Well, everything that is about fish, for sure. There is nothing really in particular that I would pitch.
Yeah.
That said, what we like of this wine, or Lugana in general, is that it really matches anything you like in terms of food. For instance, we see, as we were talking about markets a while ago, we see the Asian market growing tremendously.
Yeah, I could see that,
So Asian food matches extremely well with this. You can enjoy it young, fresh, and almost as an aperitif.
Yeah.
But the longer you keep it, the more complex it becomes.
So before we go, how long can we keep it?
Well,
if we have a proper cellar.
I would say at least 5 years for sure.
Okay.
If not even longer.
All right.
This is actually a version of Lugana meant to be consumed within a relative short period of time. So the 5 years that I mentioned is, to me, relative short.
Yeah.
Then you make the Reserva,
which
is actually even more complex. As I say, partially aged oak with a longer life.
Could we ever see it in a screw cap or not?
Well, Lugana allows screw cap for sure,
so
I would say, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, we are personally very much pro screw cap. We have other wines that we bottle and ship with screw cap, so...
I could just see this, like, in bars, just going crazy, but anyways, lovely wine. We have to move on. We'll run out of time. My guest is Pierangelo Tomasi. We're talking about the Tomasi wines today. Now, we have one... it's not Tomasi on the label, but you own it. Let's talk about this wine.
So this is actually from the estate called Casisano, located in the very famous Montalcino area in Tuscany.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about Casisano, it brings me back to 1997 that I mentioned a while ago as the year when our family started this journey of expansion. And back then, we had this dream to possibly buy a winery in the very famous Montalcino area. We were not able to make it back then, but 18 years later, in 2015, actually March 2015, we finally purchased an estate, and that is actually Casisano.
Yeah. Lovely wine. Just off the top, it's a very it's like gently aromatic, I would say. It just invites you into the glass right off the top.
Which is very much the DNA of the area where Casesano is based. Mm. It's one of the highest elevation vineyards in the denomination of Montalcino.
Yep. Well, it's more elegant style.
Well, elegant style and very food friendly.
Yeah.
You would never ever get a bigger and bolder Brunello wine from the area where Casesano vineyards are located.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we'll see. We don't know. It gets warmer and warmer everywhere.
But it gets warmer, but it's up there, quite high in elevation.
Yeah.
The climate is definitely cooler than the lower side.
How would you describe the landscape for Brunello now? Because originally, you know, the Americans were crazy about Brunello, and a lot of wine was sold mostly on the East Coast, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. But now it seems more like it's a global wine to me. There's a lot of interest in Brunello globally.
Well, for sure. I mean, as far as I can see, since we purchased Casesano and started selling Brunello, North American markets are really almost crazy for it.
Yeah.
It has a huge reputation.
Yeah.
The wine is appreciated. I would say that the brand Tuscany is also very strong.
Yeah,
and every time you talk about Brunello, you talk about Tuscany.
Yeah. But I'd ask you this question just for our listeners. Like, how would you place Brunello versus, say, a quality Chianti Classico now? Because it's the same grape, but they're totally different wines.
Well, I mean, they are both great expressions of the Tuscan terroir. Mm-hmm. Brunello is produced 100% with Sangiovese.
Yeah.
And actually a specific clone of Sangiovese called Sangiovese Grosso that grows in that area.
Yeah.
Whereas Chianti allows other grape in the blend. Mm-hmm. But that said, the landscape is similar but not the same. Altitude is different, actually, in the Montalcino area versus Chianti. They're two beautiful expressions of Tuscan. Yeah.
And how's the Amarone business since you started in that in Valpolicello?
Well,
how's that doing?
Well, Amarone is still living a great momentum, I have to say. Thanks God. I mean, it is a wine that has been evolving a bit its style. When we first met many years ago, I remember having this interview with you speaking about the Amarone back then.
Yeah.
The style was a bit more on a sweeter side, bigger and bolder.
Yeah.
Whereas today, it is certainly drier, more elegant, more contemporary, and more food-friendly.
Yeah. Italians seem pretty nimble in the way that they make wine. They've changed a lot of things as life goes on, and I think that's a credit to them and to I think why they've been so popular over a long period of time.
Well,
they adapt.
It's important to keep your own characteristic in each wines you make, but at the same time you need to understand how the consumer is evolving his palate.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you have to make a wine according to what the market likes.
Yeah, for sure.
But you have to be open to understand what the consumer is.
Pierangelo, we're almost out of time. Can we come and see you? Can people visit any of these wineries? Where can they go to see Tomasi when they're there?
Well, actually, Tomasi headquarter up in the Valpolicella area has always been open for visitors.
Yep.
And so is actually Casesano in Montalcino.
Okay,
so
great.
So just reach out through our website or social media and people can easily get to know how they can visit us.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Real pleasure. Our guest was Pierangelo Tomasi, executive director and family member of the Tomasi Family Estates in Northern Italy. That's it for this week's show. Thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor Sherry Caleb, and director of operations Stu Ferguson for all of us at the show. I'm Anthony Gismani. I wish you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.